He just talked to me last week the other day. You wrote that Sanhedrin, the king of Ashur, has sent his emissaries, and leading these emissaries is Rav Shoke. And Rav Shoke is the apostate. And he is addressing on the other hand, the emissaries of Chizkiyahu, the king of Judah. Now, as I pointed out to you last week, there are three sources that we have for what is happening at this particular moment. The one source is Kings, which we are doing. The second source is the book of Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu was the prophet in those days. And the third source is Dibrei Hayom in the book of Chronicles. Now, Yeshayahu was written at that very time, because he was the Novi, he was the prophet at that particular time. The book of Yirmiyahu was, the book of Melachim was written by Yirmiyahu, who is after that period. And the book of Chronicles was written considerably later, but that would have been, that was written by Ezra. So we've got Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezra. Those are the three sources we have for what is being written. And when I speak about the sources, I'm of course speaking about the sources that are in Tanakh. There is one other source we have, and it is a more important source than for which credit is given, and that source is Josephus. Now, Josephus belonged to the period of the destruction of the second Pesach. We are still in the period of the first Pesach before the destruction of it. So, the destruction of the second Pesach is something that took place 500 years after, a little more than 500 years after, the period with which we are dealing. And that is the period to which Josephus belongs. His great advantage, and I'm afraid he's not given credit for this advantage, and I will very soon show you, not today, but very soon I will give you one or two examples of this. If he was during the period of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, so in what period was that he lived? He lived in the period of men like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, men like Rabbi Gamliel. So he lived in the period of the Tanoim. He belongs to that period. That is the period where the oral law was not committed to writing. So he had the oral law. And in his history, he brings down the oral law. And consequently, we find things in the history of Josephus that we later we find in the Gemara, but he didn't have the Gemara. He was before the Gemara. But this was the oral teaching. He had the oral teaching. And when he found it necessary, he weaved it into his history. Don't forget, Josephus didn't write his antiquities for Jews. He was living at that time, he was living in Rome. He wrote it in Greek. And so he wrote it more for non-Jewish consumption than for Jewish consumption. But he weaved in parts of the oral law, which he had only orally written, never written, weaved it into his history. And consequently, we have Josephus also as a source of our history. Now, a lot has been said about Josephus, and many derogatory remarks have been made about him. It's very difficult to know exactly what took place there. He is considered by historians to have been a traitor only because he seemed to have got away too with too much. He was during the siege, he got away to Rome, and in Rome he was treated with the greatest respect and given much honor. But that was the way the Romans dealt with people in those days. When they subdued a country, they exercised and showed great cruelty. It was only afterwards, when they took these people, they brought them as slaves to Rome, they were quick to give them their freedom. And if these slaves demonstrated any kind of ability, they were immediately free, and once they were free, they were given opportunities to invest in the trades or in business, but they were given opportunities to possess. That happened with the slaves that were taken after the destruction of the second base of Mikdash. The Romans took these slaves and they brought them to Rome. Of course they were cruel to them. And of course they paraded them through the streets of Rome and made a very big thing of it to show the Romans what they had conquered. And you've got this Arch of Titus, which gives us an idea of what they actually did, how they brought objects from the base of Mikdash, and they paraded these through the streets of Rome. The story goes, I don't know what truth we have for it, that the Jewish slaves built the Colosseum in Rome. But shortly afterwards they were given their freedom. And the great European Jewry that arose 1,000 years later were the results of those slaves who were brought over. When you speak about the Jewry of France, the Jewry of Western Germany, where you had Rabbeinu Gershom in Mainz, and where you had Rashi, round about the same area, and then you had the school of the Tosfists, who succeeded Rashi. What we have there, and even in Rome itself, in the 9th century, in the 10th century, and in the 11th century, one had great schools of learning in Rome. And these different schools of learning excel themselves at different periods in diverse parts of Torah, in diverse departments of Torah. So in school, in Rome, you had, I suppose, what would best be termed the encyclopedists. They already made a lexicon. Rabbeinu Yechiel of Rome, Rabbeinu Nosson of Rome, they made a lexicon. A lexicon that they use it in California. Yes, it's a dictionary, but it's a dictionary with a difference. For example, yes, to a certain extent, let me try and give you an example. If they would deal with a certain word, then in that, they, in the explanation of the word, they would give you some laws connected with the word. But they wouldn't give you the laws that you would find in the Mishnah and the Gemara, because they would take it that you don't need them for that. But what they would do is, they would add, put something there in order to help you better to understand. And in that there was a chidush. In that there was something new. And so the great work that was done was the Oruch. And the Oruch was a kind of dictionary, a kind of compendium. And it's a most remarkable, it's a most remarkable work. I'm just trying to give you an example. For example, take the word Shabbos. It would be Shabbos, it would be it would say a day of rest. It would say there are 39 categories of work or labor that are prohibited on it. And as if you just give it, and we give it, you're only a few lines, you will find something inserted there that is gives you a new outlook onto the whole subject. It might be something, and say, about work. And then you suddenly realize that what it is saying is that there is an obligation to work during the 6 days of the week, corresponding to the days of rest on Shabbos. And now you get a new outlook onto it. So that is what they did. Now that was the school of Rome. And then you went on to the schools of exposition. The schools of exposition were in Mainz, Rabbeinu Gershom. Now you had a school of exposition that was exactly the same time as the school of exposition in Germany and France. You had it in North Africa, in Cairo, and I suppose that's somewhere where Tripoli or Libya is now. In Cairo, and was a great school of learning. But those schools of learning in Cairo and Rabbeinu Hananel and Rabbeinu Nisi, they came from Babylon. That was after the period of Babylon. They came from Babylon, also after the destruction of the second base of Egypt, and that was also around about the 9th century and the 10th century. They came along from Babylon. And if you can sort of imagine that map of that whole Mediterranean basin in the year 70, and we're speaking now of the Common Era, in the year 70, which is 1910 years ago, in the year 70, the first base of Middush was destroyed. And then the Jews were taken from Jerusalem, from Judah and Palestine as it was then, and brought to Rome at the same time. And there they and what happened after that year ago, and the Romans went to France, to Gaul, to England, to these places. Jewish tradesmen followed them and established trading stations. And no Jewish trading station would be established unless they had a minyan. So a Jew wouldn't go and come to a particular place and settle there. He would only go to a place if there was a minyan. And you could be quite sure he saw to it that there weren't exactly 10 people. One man might be ill one day. So there were a little bit more than 10 people. And if 10 people went, they would never go if there wasn't a mikveh there. And they would never go if they didn't have a teacher for their children. So wherever they went, they established themselves. And they established communities. And you must remember if there was a... And they wouldn't go if they didn't have a Baal there. So, and these people, they were great people. Even in my day in Lithuania, you've got a teacher, but I'm still, you still find it now, but still, it's beginning again. You go to Jerusalem, and you go and you find a teacher, and he's teaching little ones, and you start speaking to him. And he's just out of this world. The knowledge that he's got. And he's teaching little ones. You've got greatness in all these people. And these were the communities that were built up. So, you had some of it made in Israel, in Palestine. This is, we're speaking now from the year 700 to from the year 70 to 500. The 500 year period, some remained in Palestine, but by the year 200, things became so bad in Palestine that they started going to Babylon. And immediately they went there. Rav and Shmuel established Nehardon and Pumpadis, and immediately afterwards Sudor. So you had three great schools of learning, and Sudor and Pumpadis persisted for 1,000 years. They lasted for 1,000 years. And when you think of it that today, the oldest universities are only between 800 and 900 years old. So for a thousand years you have these great schools of Susan Gumbadisa. By the time they came to an end, the exile that had gone instead of with the Romans to the west, the Galut that went to the east, and they went into Babylon, by the time that community, the Babylonian community, was being dissolved, at that particular time what was happening is that they were also moving to the west. But instead of going to the northern shores of the Mediterranean, they were going to the southern shores of Mediterranean. And it all was, business is very important in the world. The northern communities came into existence, that is, Italy, Spain, France, Western Germany, Central Germany, all those northern communities came into existence because the Roman armies were going all there and the Jews made trading stations, and these trading stations became great communities with the Yeshivot, became great communities. Then on the southern shores of the Mediterranean, they came from the Babylonian side and they went to the west. Why did they go to the west? Because there were the great caravan trading routes that went from India across Arabia into Arabia into Egypt, then across Libya, Tripoli, right to Morocco, right to Tangiers, to the Atlantic coast. And from there it was easy to get across to Europe. It was only the Straits of Gibraltar that they had to cross to go to Europe. So Jewish communities started forming in North Africa. And you had Cairo, great Jewish community, Alexandria, which was much earlier. Also, a Jewish community that lasted for a long time. And the greatest community of all was in this place, Cairo. And from there, Fez had a tremendous Jewish community. So this was carrying on simultaneously. Of course, the almost inexplicable part of it is that the Jews moved from Palestine and from Babylon, moved towards the west. Why didn't they move towards the east? We don't know that. They didn't go to India. They didn't go to China. The whole movement was always to the west. The whole movement was to the west. Now, in the west, there was Christianity and there was Islam. In the east, there was paganism. So it's possible that they were afraid of the paganism. And they chose rather to go, at least these people believed in our faith. It's possible that that was the reason. But I don't think that anybody has ever come up with a very satisfactory theory. But that was the whole movement, and that is how we got everything we've got. So Josephus in the year 70, when he came there, and these people had great insight, and Josephus must have been one of the outstanding ones amongst them, and he served his people well in those countries. He seemed to have had a great influence. And when the people were attacked, he wrote a work, there was an anti-Semitic attack, he immediately wrote a work in answer to the anti-Semitic attack. Now it is Josephus. All this comes from another source, but from the source that Josephus is also a source that we have. He speaks about this very period. He starts Jewish history from the word God. From the creation he starts Jewish history, and he brings it up to his own period. And for us the important part is that he brings Torah Shebaal Peh into this history. So those are the sources that we have got. Now, we know that Sanherib, he's the king of Ashur, sends these emissaries to Hizkiyahu, who is king of Judah. And we learned last week and the week before that when Hizkiyahu came to the throne, his predecessor, who was his father, Ahaz, who was a very wicked king, was having had, and he had had trouble both from Syria and from his own brotherly neighbor. From the northern kingdom of Israel he had had trouble. And therefore he asked, this is the father of Hizkiyahu, Ahaz asked the king of Syria, of Assyria, to help him against Israel and Syria, which he did. And then he had some respite from Israel and from Syria. But he had to pay for it, and he had to pay dearly for it, because he was now subject to Assyria. When Hizkiyahu comes to the throne, and in no time he establishes himself, a young man of 25 years of age establishes himself on his throne, and the first thing he does is he makes it clear to the king of Assyria that he's not going to be subject to him. And he asserts himself and he establishes his independence. Then the king of Syria, Sennacherib, is not happy with this situation at all, and he comes after he's already finished off the northern kingdom. The Syrians have finished off the northern kingdom. Now they are ready to start with the southern kingdom. So what does Hizkiyahu do? He buys the king of Assyria, buys him, and comes to an arrangement with him. And then, and this we know from the book of Chronicles, then what he does is, there are reservoirs in Jerusalem. Jerusalem lies very high. He cuts off water from Jerusalem to the outskirts of Jerusalem, outside of Jerusalem, cuts off water there, and arranges that there are canals bringing water from the reservoirs into the city itself. Into the city itself. Now, Sanherib is no fool, and when he hears this, he understands it very well. The king, the Hizkiyahu, paid him tribute and said to him, asked him not to attack his cities, and he said, look here, whatever tributary you put on me to be paid, I will pay. So he does it, and he pays it to him, and then afterwards he sees what he is doing with the water. And he's, now this we know from the book of Kings, from the book of Chronicles. He is cutting off the water to the outskirts of Jerusalem. So in case Jerusalem is besieged, those who are around them won't be able to get any water. And during the summer there is no water there. It rains only during the winter, so they won't be able to get any water, so he's preparing himself. He's also preparing an army. Now, the king of Assyria, Sanherib, sends his messengers. He sends Rabshakeh and his messengers to the king of Judah, to Hizkiyahu, that they must now give up. And there are a few verses that we've got to do. There are a few verses that we've got to do here. you return to chapter 18, verse 14. You've got, Vayishlach Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda Melech Ashur Lachisho. Chizkiyo sent to the king, Chizkiyo, the same king of Judah, sends to the king of Ashur to Lachish, like Moses saying, Chotosi Shuv Me Olai, Es Ashur Titen Olai Eso. I'm coming to you again. Anything that, any tribute that you place on me, I will give you. But don't attack me. By Yosef Melech Ashur al Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda Sholech Meos Kiko Kesev Shleshi Kiko Zom. So he places on him tribute 300 talents of silver, whatever that might be, and 30 talents of gold. Now it seems to have been a tremendous sum of money. And then we are told in verse 15, Vayitem Chizkiyo Eskola Kesef Alim Tobeis Hashem Ubaetzes Beis HaMelech. Chizkiyo gave whatever he could find. He had to provide this huge sum of in silver and gold. So he took it from the Beis HaMikdosh and from the from his palace and wherever he could get it from. And he tells us, for Esa he kotzatz Chizkiyo es dalsa zeichel Hashem ve'esu ha'omnes asher tzipor Chizkiyo melech Yehuda v'hitnem lemelech Ashur. What he really did was the doors and the doorposts and certain parts of the Beis HaMikdosh had been overlaid with gold. He peeled off that overlay of gold. And so he was able to raise the 30 talents of gold, or the 30 bars of gold, which he had to pay tribute. That was the way he did it. And now verse 17 starts with this delegation that the king sends to him. And the king of Ashur sends Tarku and Rav Shoke with the Chayil Kobeid, with a great army, to Jerusalem. Vayalu vayobel Yerushalayim, the Jews that came to Jerusalem, vayalu vayobel v'yamdu, is the Olas Habrecho Yeno, Asher v'mesilas Beichel Beis. And now they come to the canal of the upper Bruko, at the upper reservoir. So from the upper reservoir, there was a canal that brought the water into Jerusalem. Sanhedrin's emissaries stand at this canal because they want to show that they know what this canal is about. This canal is to bring the water to Jerusalem in time of a siege. But it was cut off from roundabout. By Hikru Uel HaMelech, by Yetzei Alehem, and Yochim Ben Shiltiyo, Asher Al HaBois, Veshavno HaSofer, VeYoach Ben Otav HaMazkir. So the king of Judah sends his emissaries now to meet the emissaries of the king of Assyria. Vayomer alehem Rav Shoke, says Rav Shoke to them, Imri lo el Chizkiyo, say now to Chizkiyo, Kol omar ha-melech ha-gadol melech Ashur, thus saith the great king, the king of Ashur, Mo abito chel nazeh asher betochtu. You become so confident. So where do you take all this confidence? In whom is it that you trust? You know, it's alright for a country like America to be a bit cheeky to Russia. And Russia can afford to be quite impertinent to America. But Afghanistan is not in such a strong position. Not the same thing. Says Ashur to the king of Israel, for where have you taken all this confidence? Assyria is the great power. Israel is a little land. And it's been truncated. It's only Judah out of Israel now. And Judah consists of Judah and Benjamin, a little piece of land. So where have you taken all this confidence? If you've taken all this confidence, you must be relying on somebody. In whom have you put your trust? My bitochen azi asher betochtu. What is this trust that you've got? Now, he says, these are the words of Sanhedrin to Chizkiyahu. He says to him, you, Chizkiyahu, Marta, you said, achtav dvar sefer sein. I will just use words. In other words, says Sanhedrin, you tried to fool me. You said you were going to be good now. And you're not going to do anything as far as I'm concerned. You'll pay me tribute. And you paid me tribute. Which means that we had an understanding between us. It means that we had a covenant, we had a treaty between us. You would pay me tribute, I wouldn't attack you. But these were only words. On the other hand, Eitzel Gurula Milchomo, you were taking counsel and you were preparing for war. What you did was with the water. You saw that Jerusalem would have water, and around Jerusalem there would be no water, and you are preparing an army. Ato, now, Alibo Tachto Kimor Ravitobi, on whom do you rely that you have rebelled against me? He's using the word Mervi. You have rebelled against me. We came to an agreement. We had a treaty. And you go and prepare yourself for war when we've got a treaty of peace? This is a serious matter. Ato, now, Hinevo Tachte Lecho, Almish Enes Akone Orosuta Ze Amitzrayim, Asher Yisomech Ish Olov Uvo Bechapo Akone Orosuta Ze, Almitzrayim Asher Yisomech Ish Olov Uvo Bechapo Nekovo Kein Paro Melech Mitzrayim Lechol Abed Chimlo. He said, the only if you put your trust on anybody, that's all right. Now, so Sanhedrin's message is that if you put your trust in Egypt, you rely on him. Now what he's going to say, just as we prepare you for it, what he's going to say is, if a person has got confidence, then he relies on one of three things. Either he relies on himself, then unless he is foolish or foolhardy, he has resources, or he relies on some person or on some power, or he relies on Hashem. Now, Chizkiyahu, you can't rely on yourself. Just haven't. So you must be relying on somebody else. It can either be on another country, and the only other country that is available on whom you are able to rely is Egypt. Or you rely on Hashem. It can only be on one of those two. Now let us deal with Egypt first. If you're going to rely on Egypt, Egypt has got two faults. First of all, Egypt itself is weak. It is a weak reed on which to lean upon. Not only is it a weak reed, but it's a broken reed. And if you're going to take this lead and lean on it, it will break further. And it will enter into the palm of your hand where you are holding it, and it will do you damage. That is Egypt. Egypt is weak. And not only that, if it is going to help you, it's not going to help you. But if it's going to help itself, it's going to help you for what it can get out of it. What will it get out of it? It will get taxes and plunder out of you. That is why it does it. So it's a broken reed, and if you lean on it, it will do you damage. Egypt will come in, and it will take plunder, and it will take taxes from you. It's this that you rely on, and that is what it tells you. And that is what he tells you in verse 21. Behold, you, you are relying, you are putting your trust in this broken reed in Egypt. I said, if you lean on it, still not only is it weak, but it will break. And it will penetrate your hand and do your damage. That's exactly Pharaoh and all those who trust in him. Pharaoh does it only for what he can get out of it. He will do you damage. He won't help you. So does that make sense? You put your trust in him. Well, if you don't put your trust in Egypt, there's only one other source, into whom you can put your trust. V'chi somaru elai el Hashem Elokeinu b'tochnu. What then do you say? We put our trust in Hashem, our God. Don't forget, Rav Shokei is the emissary, and he is the apostate. He knows all about it. Then says the king of Assyria, Halehu Asher Hesir Chizkiyahu Et Bemosof. You remember that Chizkiyahu was really the first king that came and removed the altars that they had built. He also removed the Etnus Bechosof and the Bemos and the altars. The high places and the altars. By Yomer Yehuda with Yerushalayim, and he said to Judah and to Jerusalem, you shall worship only at the one altar, and that is the altar that is in Jerusalem. Now, that was his understanding of what Chizkiyahu did. By removing the altars, he can only understand something through himself. He does whatever he does, he is motivated for personal reasons. If Chizkiyahu does it, he can be motivated only for personal reasons. Think some chayav to himself. What is better for religion? If there are synagogues all over, or if there's only one synagogue in one central place. What is better, if there are synagogues in every one of the 50 states of America, and in every town in each one of the 50 states, or if there's only a huge temple in Washington? What is better for religion? Surely it's better to have more. Then why does he want only one in Jerusalem, one? Then he's got complete control. It's for himself that he wants all this. So God can't like something like that. Say some cheder. The Atur and now, I'm sorry, so some cheder says that he does it only for himself. That's all he's doing it for. He says, Hashem is not going to be pleased, and you are putting your trust in Hashem, you haven't got a chance. The Ato, and now he's always known as Adoni, as Melech Ashur, the Etne Lechor Alpayim Susim in Tucha Losis Lechor Kruchim Aleihem. He says, continue what I will do. I will give you 2,000 horses, and you can form a cavalry. You're trying to build up an army. Form a cavalry, but you've got to guarantee me that you've got 2,000 horsemen to ride these horses. You haven't even got 2,000 horsemen. And then you rely on yourselves. So you can't rely on Egypt. You can't rely on Hashem. And you haven't got even got 2,000 horsemen if I supply you the horsemen. You haven't even got that. So you're going to rely on yourselves. What kind of a war is this? And how can you answer even one of the noblemen of the servants of my master, one of the smallest, a nobleman amongst the smallest of the servants of my master, and you will rely on Egypt that they will give you chariots and horsemen. You've got nothing of your own, you're going to rely on them. After now, Hamila Bayade Noi or Lisi Alabokoma Zela Ashko, he said, just consider, why do you think I am doing this Kamas Sankhair? You want to rely on Hashem? I am really doing Hashem's work for him. You think Hashem is pleased with Iskio when he's done away with these domos, with these high places? And people must worship now only in Jerusalem. You think that Hashem is pleased? I'm doing Hashem's work to destroy him. Because Hashem said to me, go up to the land, to this land, and destroy it. How much he knew of the truth, I don't know. But it is true that Hashem did say to Yeshayahu that the time has come now for Ashur to be destroyed. And Ashur is about to be destroyed. But the way he's going to be destroyed is he's going to attack Jerusalem. And that is going to be his destruction. By Yomir El Yochim Ben Hilki Yohu Veshevno Be Yoro Etzrab Shoke Aromis, and so they said, Yochim ben Hilki Yohu, who is really the main spokesman, and also Shevno and Yero, they say to Rav Shoke, please speak to us in Aramis, in Aramaic, because we understand it. The Alta Dabri Moni Yehudis the Osne Ho'om Asher Anachemo. Don't speak to us in Hebrew so that the people who are on the walls on the rampart can understand what it is you are saying. By Gomer Alehim Rav Shoke says to them, Ha'al Adunecho Ve'erecho Shlochani Aduni Ledabeo Ez Adborimo Eile. He says, you know, Rav Shoke, you don't seem to understand what it is that I'm saying to you. Do you think that my master sent us to speak to you, that you should speak to the king, and we are only concerned with the king? We are not concerned with the king anymore. He says, Halo ala noti mayoshim ala chelvo le etonis. He says, we are speaking not really to you. We are speaking to the people who are on the wall. We are speaking to all the people of Jerusalem. As far as your master is concerned, he is going to be punished. He rebelled. He had a treaty and he rebelled. No hope for his kiddo at all. Voice, he speaks, and he speaks in Hebrew. By the bear, and he says, by the name, Shinu devar ha-melech ha-godel melech ha-shur. listen to the words of the great king, the Melech of the king of Assyria. Kelomar Amelech. Thus says the king, Al Yashi Lochem Chizkiyo, let not Chizkiyo lead you astray. Because he can't save you from the hand of his master. And don't let Chizkiyahu make you put your trust in Hashem, saying, "Hatzel yatzilenu Adonai v'lo nisonei nesotir azos v'yad melech Ashur," that Hashem will deliver you, and he will not allow this city to go into the hand of the king of Ashur. Al tishmu el Chizkiyahu. Hearken not to Chizkiyahu, ki chel omar melech Ashur. For thus saith the king of Ashur, Asui ti v'rocho, make with me a treaty. V'rocho is a blessing, but it means make with me a treaty. Utsu'u elai, and come out to me. The city is already being besieged. Come out to me. Ve'ichlu ish eskapno, ve'ish te'eno, ushesu ish ve'boro. And let each man eat of his vine and of his fig tree and drink of his well, because if you don't come out, it will all be destroyed. Ad boi velo kachti eskem in eretz ka'atzachem eretz dobon yisroosh eretz b'echev u'achronim eretz zayhidu rabash v'chiyu v'lo sabusu v'al tishmu u'el chizkiyo ki yasis eskem le'mer Hashem Yatzilenu. He said, I will come and I will take you all away eventually, but I will take you away to a land just as good as this. And he's telling them that he's going to do with them what he did with the northern kingdom, or what his predecessor did, Shalmaneser, his predecessor did with the northern kingdom, and this will be the liquidation of Judah. But I'm giving you this opportunity to save yourselves. And we just as our tale, Hatzilu Halehe Adolim Ish Es Arzel Biyad Melech Ashur, did it happen that the other gods, today were they able to save their countries from the king of Assyria? So how do you think you are going to save your country from the king of Assyria? That is as far as we need to go. And that brings us really to the end of the chapter, and this is the second time we've done the chapter. The first time we did the chapter superficially, and now we did the chapter in order to get a better understanding of it. Now, the king of Assyria, of course, is Melchu, and when he speaks about trust, he understands that every person has faith, that without faith one cannot possibly exist. And everyone believes, without belief you can't possibly exist. And the Chaim Salavozer says, if a person doesn't trust in Hashem, then he must trust in someone or in something outside of Hashem. But one lives by hope, and hope is the result of trust. I trust in something. I trust that the times will change because I believe in this leader, because I believe in this system. But I put my trust into that. And he tries to break down his egos as the only three in whom you can put your trust. In yourself, if I were to give you 2,000 horsemen, you wouldn't find the men to, if I had 2,000 horses, you wouldn't find the riders for them. Put your trust in Egypt. It's foolish. Egypt is weak, it's a broken reed. Egypt will only damage you. It's not going to save you. And thirdly, you put your trust in Hashem. Don't rely on Hashem. Chizkiyo hasn't been faithful to his God. He doesn't know how faithful Chizkiyo has been to his God. And now, I'm going to give you a little bit of time for a break. But I do really reluctantly today, because I must go on with my other subject, and the other subject is Chizkiyahu is this great king, one of the greatest kings we have had, and this is the man that is the son of Ahaz, who is wicked to the core. How does such a wicked man have such a good son? How is it possible for this turnabout to take place? And the Midrash says that this is not the only case. After all, Avram is the son of Terah. And then you get a person like Chizkiyahu, who is the son of Ahaz. And we're going to get another case before we finish the second book of Kings. And you're going to find a person like Yeshiyahu, great king, son of Manasseh, a very wicked king. How is it possible for this turnaround to take place? That is the subject that I began dealing with last week, and I've got to take it a little bit further with you today. Will you have your tea and what goes with it in as short a time as possible? One of these things that I propose to you is, and a lot of this and not to be made of this in the Musar world, and that is that man was placed into a complete world, and it was a world of great beauty, and man came into this world with a completely open and mature mind. And he comes into this world where his ability to think and to think creatively and to think deeply and to think broadly comes as naturally to him as breathing. That is when he is created. He comes into a world of the greatest beauty. And everything in this world has a purpose. And the purpose is to serve him. And his purpose is to grow intellectually and spiritually. That is his own purpose. He comes into this world and he hasn't been commanded, given any commandment. The commandment that he is not to eat of the tree comes after he's already been born, and he is in this world, and he's already enjoying this world. Then comes that command. So we are able to draw a simple conclusion, and that is that this world was not given to him as a reward for anything that he has done. No reward. This is given to him because this is how Hashem wants it. He has created a person, Chaviv Odom Sheniv Rebetzelem, how dear and beloved man is to Hashem, who has created him after his likeness and in his own image. All this goodness. And from there he grows. Now, I don't have to try and explain to you any further. You are quite able, anyone is able, to create a picture of what this world was like. And this whole world created only for one person. Now, the Gemara takes a principle from it. Man was created singly, and we've often discussed it, that one reads the Torah, all animals, all forms of vegetation were created many. Man is the only one that was created singly. Singly. one person. The Lord created a number of men, like a number of elephants, a number of giraffes, a number of hippopotami. Man, one single man was created. And the reason that the Gemara says is that man should say, Bishvili Nivro Kolo Elam, that he should realize that this whole world was created only because of him and only for him. And now, of course, comes the conclusion. And the Gemara says, that's why man was created alone. So that even today, each human being should realize this and should say to himself, Bishvili Nivro Olam. For us, it is very difficult to do it. Because we are taught in school. And after we leave school, we go to college and we go to universities, that teaching continues. We are surrounded by this teaching. It is in the newspapers, it's in the journals. Wherever we go, we see, we read, and we hear that we are here just by chance. This is the way this human being has evolved. We've got as much to do with this world as any animal has to do with this world. We just happen to have by happenstance, it's a word that I'm using more and more, we just happen to be here and to have developed along these lines. From that kind of training, having been inculcated with that, to switch and to be able to think that this world was created for me. That is what this world is here for. With all that goes with it, first of all, man realizes on what an elevated level he is. You know, there was a book written by Theodore Dreiser once, I think he called it The American Tragedy. And the tragedy that one finds in this book is where a young man who comes from the poor of the poor, a young man without any background whatsoever, starts working, and he has a girl, and he becomes very friendly with that girl, and you know what happens when they become very friendly. In the meantime, his employer is realizing who he is, and his employer is a man of very great wealth. He realizes who he is, and this poor boy had no idea of what he was, what he could be. And this employer begins taking an interest in him, invites him to his home, makes him feel at home, wants him to meet his daughter, and has already an idea that this would be a suitable husband for his daughter. She's a most beautiful girl, highly intelligent, and this boy now realizes that the world is open to him. The world is open to him. The tragedy is he's got to get out of his mess with this other girl. And the tragedy is if he only knew this before. But when he was starting it right at the bottom of the ladder, coming from such poverty, no background whatsoever, when he came out of all that, when he came to start working, he had no idea of who he was really. He just knew about his past and about his background. And he didn't think he'd ever be able to get very far. If he had only known about that before, every person must say, Bishvili Nivro Olam. This world is created because of me. That is how important I am. that is the level of which I am. And out of that so much comes. I already told you of two passages in the Gemara. The one passage in the Gemara tells us about the disciples of Rabbi Ami and independently the disciples of Rabbi Hanina. Now these two belong to the period of the Amorot, approximately from the year 200 to 500. It's in the common era, not so terribly long ago. 1700 years ago in Jewish history is not so long ago. Rabbi Abi and Rabbi Hanina belong to this period. They came from Palestine, which was under the Romans, and the schools of Pundit and Sura, about which we spoke earlier, had already been established in Babylon, and they came to Babylon, and in Babylon they had their disciples. And one of the many, many fascinating things that one finds in the Gemara, and there are thousands of them, and sometimes I wonder why somebody doesn't come and take just one of the fascinating things in the Gemara and collect them together. And in Torah, it already starts in the Nach, it already starts much earlier. The greetings with which people greet one another, and the way they take leave of one another, the way they say farewell or goodbye to one another. You have that great episode in the book of Ruth where Boaz comes to the workman and he says, Hashem Imochem. He uses the word, the name of Hashem, and that is how he greets them. And it's got several meanings. It means Hashem is with you, and it means Hashem, may Hashem be with you. But he didn't say it until it was decided by a Beit Din of which he was the head. He said, Hashem Imochem. They decided that one has the right to greet people like that. But he would never greet people like that if he didn't see that Hashem was with them. And the people whom he greets know it. That he would never say anything that he didn't believe in with all his heart, his soul, and with all his might. He would never say it. And he uses the name of Hashem, and he comes and he says, Hashem Imochem. Hashem is with you. I see it in your work that Hashem is with you. May Hashem always be with you. That is the greeting. And this is decided by Sanhedrin that one is permitted to give that greeting, what he does to them. And now the disciples of Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Hanina, when they took leave, they said, Olomecho tir ebechayecho, may you see your world in your lifetime. Now, I must tell you, everyone, in the Gemara, there are thousands and thousands of pages in the Gemara. To understand one line in the Gemara, we wouldn't be able to understand it unless we have the heritage of the Rishonim, that wonderful period from the year 1000 to 1500. Wouldn't be able to understand. We would read a passage like this, a greeting. This is the farewell greeting when they took leave of their teacher. The school of Rabbi Ami, when they took leave of their teacher, the school of Rabbi Hanina, when they took leave of their teacher, the words were three words. May you see your world in your day. We wouldn't understand what it means. The Sheet of the Kibbet says that is a work that belongs to this period from the year to 1500. All important to us because they were near enough to the time of the Tanoim and the Amoraim, to the period of the Mishnah and the Gemara, to know what they said. And they are near enough to us that we can understand what they said. They are the link. Without them we wouldn't have been here today as Jews. They said, what does it mean? What does it mean? May you see your word in your day. And I wrote out the exact words of the Shitim HaKabetzes explaining this three-word greeting. The Shitim HaKabetzes said, it means just, I'll read the Hebrew to you afterwards for the benefit of those who will be able to understand it. When a man reaches the pinnacle of wisdom, he is like one who has entered the world of the neshamos, the world of the souls, not the nefesh, but the world of neshamos, shehem seichel mido, which is independent intelligence, that is intelligence that is not hampered nor restricted by the body or by anything material. And in some little way he reaches into this world of absolute intelligence, independent intelligence in his own lifetime. That is the greatest blessing that they can bestow upon their master. That's what it means. May you see your world in your lifetime. May you see your Olam Habo whilst you are still alive. May you reach that height. They would only say to them if they knew without any doubt that it was possible for their master to do that. And then they gave expression to that blessing. But the point that I am making is that here you are dealing with men whom their disciples know have the possibility of perhaps reaching into those heights. Got that possibility? That is reaching to the heights of Odom Orisha. So when one reaches those heights, then intellectual activity, and I'm using intellectual activity in the fullest sense of the word, that intellectual activity is as natural as breathing. I don't have to think about breathing. So the intellectual activity will be as natural as the breathing. And that is what they bestow upon their master. That is the blessing that they bestow upon them. Now, that is one Gemara. And these Gemaras just, I quote to you these Gemaras because they have had such an influence on me in my own life. The whole world is created only for me. Now comes another point that is made, and Musa deals with it. We are even a step further than the first man, because the world is extended, whereas it was only Odom Orisha and the creatures in the world and everything else, the vegetation and the mineral life in the world, the mineral kingdom in the world. We are dealing with millions of other human beings. So each human being, when he says the world was created for me, also means that all these millions of human beings in the world were created only for me. You know, it was early on Shabbos morning. It was dark, and I was getting up. Now, Shabbos morning is something quite special. I go into my study very early. The lamp is burning. I take out my sforim. My wife has prepared the most wonderful home-ground coffee from the real beans, and the beans have been carefully chosen and mixed. And it is proper milk. It's not cow's milk. It's not skim milk. The cream has not even been taken. It's not homogenized. The cream has not even been taken into the milk. And I try to be good, and I do my own homogenization. And I take a little bit of milk off, and I shake up the bottle, and then I put the milk back, and I shake it all again, and then I pour it out, but I know it's got cream in it. All this. But when I got out of bed, before I opened my eyes, before I put my feet onto the ground, and when there was sound. Birds were twittering and warbling. The most beautiful sounds. And then there was the water. Early in the morning, they put on the sprinklers. And the gardens were being watered all around. And I was listening to these sounds. And those were the only sounds I heard. And how beautiful those sounds were. And the rest of the week, when I get up early, I've got to be at school at 6 o'clock and I'm afraid I'll be late and all that. I don't get a chance to enjoy all this. And when I put my feet on the ground, the idea of Matira Sulim Zolkeith Kapufim, one is able to do that, to move one's body. Rokahu Oretz Alamoyim, Hamechim Nitzadei Gover. Put one's feet on the ground, stand up, you bet. Head, space, space. All this goes through my mind. And all this only for him. And then, as I've told you before, it happens to me every time I go into the airplane. I think of what Ben Zoma used to say. When he once saw 600,000 people, he said, all these are created for me. The first man, before he had bread, what he had to do? He had to plow the ground. He had to, first of all, weed the ground, plow the ground, sow it. And then it starts the reaping and the winnowing and the fanning and the threshing and the milling and the kneading. And only then he gets the bread. My bread is delivered at the door. Clothing, what all those are. And he looked at 600,000 people, that there was a gathering, 600,000 people, and he said, all these serve me. Now I came to the planet. Millions of people have been on, working on that. All parts of the world, taking the minerals out of the ground, making them into metals that can be used. Putting them into the engine. Millions of people have gone into all that to make it just possible. Communications, what goes on. All that is created only. But now comes the big question. And this was, it was created for the first man, not as a reward. This is what he needs. He was given the first commandment afterwards. This is what man needs. That's why it's given to him. It elevates man. Also tells him what his responsibility is. Also tells him that he can ruin it too. Man is to be conscious of that. And now comes the important matter. And that's the new part of the shiur. Does that mean to say that all this is created for a wicked man too? Or has the wicked man got it in on the basis of what the Torah calls Meir le'echot Meir le'meir? If there is a room, and the room is lit up, and it's lit up for one person only, because he needs the light, and 50 people come in, it's not lit up for the other 49 people, but they've got all the benefit from it. 100 people come in, it's not lit up for all the 99, but they've also got the benefit from it. The Torah says, oh no, that's not the way it works. So if you think it works that this is only for the righteous people that there is this world, and the reason the wicked people have it is because since the righteous people have it, the wicked people have it also. That's not the reason. The reason is that it is for the wicked person as much as it is for the righteous person. What is it that the wicked person has got that he also has? Doesn't obey the Torah, doesn't live as a human being, lives without Derech Eretz. Why should he have to? Now, you know, I've got a picture in Demetri now, imprinted on my mind. And that is when we first came to Venice, and my wife and I took a walk on the board. You know, the tights we saw. I'm only sorry that my wife didn't have a camera, which she now has. The types we saw. And I asked myself, are these people who we created the Tzelem Elokim? I couldn't believe it. And the Torah tells us that everything that is in this world has been created for each one of them. I can take one person out, and I must know that this whole world, with everything that is in it, and all the human beings, created for him. And I don't even know if he's got the Torah with him. Created for him. How do we understand that? For what reason? He doesn't deserve it. But then we know that the world was created for man before he did anything to deserve it. It was created because Hashem said, this is what the man needs. He doesn't need it. Why is it created for him? For one reason only. He has got the freedom. He's got freedom. He's got freedom. If he wants to, he can change that. If he wants to, he can change all that. And this person can become a mensch. And that applies to every single one. So, we've got all this, and he enjoys all this, not because we have got it, and he happens to be here, so he also enjoys it, because of us, no. Because of himself. So the greatness in the human being is, he's got his Kirach HaBechira. And with the Kirach HaBechira, with this free determination of mind, this freedom he's got, freedom over himself, he's got, he can do what he wants. He can change all that in a moment. Of course, it's a big struggle. A very big struggle. He can change all that in a moment. That is the power that he's got. And it's because of this power that this whole world is created for him. It's his. Because of the power of his, not because of what he is, but of what he can make of himself. Any moment during his life, he can turn it into. Now that is a principle that I've conveyed to you today. That is a total principle. And back again to the old story which I've quoted to you from the Messilas Yeshurim, where the Messilas Yeshurim says, "Ki cholin yonei ha'olam ma'bein l'tov bein l'mutov, hinei ha'im yishyenes la'odom," because everything that is in the world is here for him to be in the middle of a battle. And that is what he is here for. I can't find the just the exact words for the moment.
principle in Hebrew as the message. What is it?
Terech HaBechirot. Bechirot is that a man has got free determination of will. He can do exactly as he pleases, which is easier than to do exactly what one doesn't please to do. That is the great thing about it. He can check, he can do what he doesn't want to do. Oh, he does, he can control himself and build himself up not to do that which he wants to do. And of course, this is the Vilna Gaon. And you know, everyone, just realize who the Vilna Gaon was. And he says, Hachazeta Buso, hold on to Muso, Altihera, don't let it go. Mitzuroho, guard it carefully. Kiicha Yechoho, that is your whole life. And says the Vilna Gaon, for that is your whole life. What is your whole life? Kimashevo Odom Chai, Ukadei Yishbo Hamido Sheloshibo Adheno. Man, he lives just to break something in his character that he hasn't broken yet. The Yochem Tzorich Tomid Leizchazek, the Imchi Leizchazek, Lomolo Chai. If he doesn't do this, there's no purpose in life. So it is to build up one's character until one acquires what we call a table personality. This whole world is for him because he has got the ability to do it. Theodore Dreiser describes this young man. His employer prepared to do anything for this young man because he realizes who he is and what he can do and what can become. In the end, he goes to the electric chair. But he had it all in him. If only he had known about it before. And the Talmud comes and tells us about it before. And how much confidence our employer has in us. How much confidence Hashem has in us. We've got that power. And so, everybody can become, can raise himself out of his surroundings, above his surroundings, and create a little world for himself. You know, they used to say in Lithuania, when they spoke about the Vilna Gaon, they said, you know why it's called the Vilna Gaon? And of course, Vilna Gaon is because he was from Vilna. But you say, you know why it's called the Vilna Gaon? Vilna Gaon. If a person only wills it, Vil is the same as the English word. Vilna, if you only will it, you can be a god. And that is the lesson of it. The Terech HaBechira. What power that is, the Terech HaBechira. You take an atom, what is it? It's got so much power in it. This atom that you can't even see. This human being has got so much power in it. What is that power? That power is the Terech HaBechira. Is that predetermination of will. That is this great power in the human being. However wicked he is, that is the power he's got. And Hashem has given him all this world. Not because of what he is now. Not because of the good deeds he has done. Because he's got this great power. Don't know yet when it can break out. Thank you, ladies. And now, Karen has asked to have a few minutes in order that she can speak to me.